You're listening to the Youth Crick Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at WUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at WUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
I need your deck. This is a bad one. The worst yet.
There was an escape from the off-world colonies 2 weeks ago. 6 replicants. 3 male, 3 female. They slaughtered 20...
A Blade Runner's job is to hunt down replicants. Manufactured humans you can't tell from the real thing.
What's this?
Roy Batty. Probably the leader.
There was just one outfit making replicants that superhuman. The Terrell Corporation.
Mr. Deckard, Dr. Eldon Terrell.
I don't get it, Tyrell.
Commerce is our goal here at Tyrell. More human than human is our motto.
I was looking for 6 replicants in a city of 106 million people.
You ever see this girl, huh?
Never. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Retrospective. I am your host, Kel Smith. Joining me today is...
Nick Risby.
And today we are going to be talking about one of my all-time favorite films, Blade Runner. In honor of not only its 35th anniversary that was last June, the new Blade Runner 2049 is out, or is about to be out as of this recording. And so Nick and I decided to get together and talk about one of the most acclaimed cult status-ish science fiction movies. So with that said, I will start with you, Nick. What do you think of Blade Runner?
I think it is exactly what you said it is. It's a very cult movie, very niche. I'd say a very niche movie. It's nobody really, like, if you're not a fan of the genre, you really won't like get it, because a lot of it, and I do think it takes multiple viewings to understand the movie. Definitely, there's, especially with the different cuts and everything, and like just everything that's been going on in the last few years with the hype building up to this one, and just, I think it's really something you have to experience. But if you're not into it, don't get into it.
I'll say this: I don't have any nostalgia for the movie because I saw this only a couple years ago. However, when I saw the director's cut, the one that was from 1992 or something like that, I really loved the movie instantly because it just had everything I was looking for in a science fiction movie. It had a great story, an interesting protagonist, a love interest who is compelling, and villains who are watchable, and also you understand where they're coming from. And also, it's the... You know, really, Scott kind of gets, you know, pigeonholed as the guy who's like, whenever he does science fiction, it always is about life or about religion or about the God complex. It's about, you know, it's him essentially Martin Scorsese-ing with science fiction and big toys and usually a phallic-ish alien. And Blade Runner, it's like the perfect culmination of everything he's been trying to do. And I think the reason why he's been still trying to do the same kind of story of, like, basically, you know, the Adam and Eve story, when Adam confronts God, I think he tries because I don't think he fully understands that people get this movie. Like, or he's trying to make the movie to where people get it. And I think that's why we have Prometheus and Alien Covenant and debatably Exodus. Debatably. Mm-hmm. I think that's why we still have, you know, that's why he still keeps making similar movies. But the thing is, this is a perfect Blade Runner movie, a perfect Ridley Scott movie, and it has a great performance from Harrison Ford, even though you can tell at times he was exhausted, probably... just ready to go home, like our usual Harrison Ford. or current Harrison Ford.
For somebody who doesn't like acting that much, Harrison Ford does a lot of it.
It's the only thing you can get a job for. But yeah, this is one of my favorite movies, and I love the story. And I do agree it takes multiple times to get it. But for me, I have my kind of my own theory as to what the movie is and what the movie is about. And it sounds the more sound I have found from other people, like from anything else. So it's not my theory is not different in, like, I'm not like gonna millennial it and be like, and this is what I think in my own opinion. I'm not gonna do that. Even though I am a millennial and I still think this is my own opinion.
Own it, man. I mean, it's your opinion of what you think. Own it.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people that, like, this movie was never really on my radar. I loved it. I loved it the first time I watched it. I've only ever watched the final cut version of it, just because that's always been available to me. And it's one of those movies, I think, that you have to want to sit down and watch it. You can't just, like, passively watch it. And I think the interesting thing about it is that, like, after with each cut that they've done so far, they're hinting more and more and more at a certain
spoilers.
Plot. I'm not doing spoil. I'm not gonna spoil it right now. Okay. I'll do it a little bit later. But they're hinting more and more and more at a certain plot point that they want you to get. But then I think the existence of the sequel of the movie has just pretty much ruined that. Personally speaking, I think that, like, if the lore is correct that they've established in that universe, then I think we can all safely say that what... Oh, my bad. ESPN, folks. No, but I think we can all essentially say that plot point is no longer relevant. Would you agree or disagree with me with that? The fact that we know he's in the new movie.
I disagree because I feel... Well, and in the theatrical cut, I will say this. In the theatrical cut, and it really is kind of woven in there last minute. And we'll talk about the different cuts in just a second, but the ending of the movie suggests that, or it not only suggests, it basically says Rachel is a model that will have no expiration date.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going by the knowledge of what we know about Rachel and kind of compare that to what we've seen in Blade Runner 2049. To be fair, we know nothing. We've not seen the movie yet. This is the day of it coming out as we're recording. And
we have tickets to tonight.
You have tickets?
I'll get it. I'm going to buy it after we get
down
here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, me too. And I think it's a possibility as to it could still be possible that what people have been speculating and what Ridley Scott wants us to think about Deckard could still happen based on that information alone is that it's assumed that Tyrell made Rachel to have no expiration date, whereas the other four replicants that we know or that are being hunted, they can only live 4 years. They were only programmed, but because Rachel was programmed initially to have an expiration date, I think it's possible. So I think it's possible that Deckard could be that.
Spoiler alert.
Deckard could be a replicant. I think it's highly possible. And it just be, you know, he's just aging. Like, it's like that bad Terminator movie that just came out.
So
he's just aged.
Here's my counter theory to that, though. Is she's a brand new model, correct? Like, we know for a fact she's a brand new model. Like,
fresh from the line.
Fresh from the line, never been done that. So they just now recently, in the lore of the movie, they've just recently made that possible for replicants to do that. Am I wrong?
I mean, I watched the final cut, I think, 2 weeks ago, and they didn't say specifically if she's new or not. I think Tyrell was presenting her as, you know, like, and this is our new model. But so it could be. It's not specifically said. That's the thing. that we shouldn't get hung up on. We can speculate, but it's not specifically said that she's fresh from the line.
Well, so given that kind of knowledge there that we don't really know, for example, but I'm saying like...
In air quotes.
But, air quotes, yes, but Deckard has been around for a while, like already. He's been a Blade Runner for years. He's already been doing what he's been doing for a long time. So by that logic, he's been doing it longer than 4 years. And that means that they wouldn't have had that technology when he was doing this.
In all fairness, his memories could be implants.
Yes, that's true. But like, then why again would they hire him to do that? Then like, why would they hire him to be a Blade Runner then?
I have a theory that Emmett Walsh's character, I think it's Bradley. If I'm screwing up, I'm sorry. But that the character that drags Deckard back into the world, played by Emmett Walsh.
Right, the guy does the origami stuff, right? Or am I thinking
No, you're thinking of Edward James Olmos.
Okay.
I almost argue that he's a replicant too. I think everyone to a certain extent is a replicant.
But then that like that kind of sullies the plot though, in the sense that like, oh, it would be the only thing that, like I said, would be really cool is if the only like only person you'd really care if was a replicant or not would be Harrison Ford. But Harrison Ford's character, Deckard. But if Deckard was, what does that change the plot? How does that change the plot?
It doesn't. I mean, that's the thing I keep grappling with, is I understand people's like concerned with people believing like, why does it matter if Deckard is a replicant or not? And it doesn't matter plot wise. But it does add more care. It adds more to the world building of the world of Blade Runner, in that the world of Blade Runner, it's set up to be, you know, the replicants are outlawed on Earth. Like, if you're a replicant and you step on Earth, you are done for. You are pretty much asking to be killed on site. No judge, jury. You're dead. Mm-hmm. You're gonna. And so I think that the world of Blade Runner has gone so cruel that they will have a replicant kill other replicants and not know it. Basically like having, you know, in the old South, like hiring a black bounty hunter to go get slaves.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, the level of cruelty that the world... And it's believable. It's very believable that they are just like, you know, we don't want to do it anymore. We don't want to hunt our own. We don't want to hunt people that look and sound like us. Let's hire other people to do it. Let's make our own, you know, race of people that will do it for us. Because that's really what the whole film is. It's about slavery. It's mm-hmm. about evolved slavery. Because, I mean, it's specifically said in the, you know, opening crawl of the movie. That they are used to go and fight wars, they're used to go and mine planets, you know. So they are technically, you know, a race of people with no human rights.
By the way, I'm pretty sure George Lucas might have had a couple words about that opening crawl, the way it was set up. I'm like, really? That looks familiar. Ridley, you want to talk to me real quick in the corner?
Well, to be fair, Ridley, George stole that from the old, you know, yeah, Flash Gordon.
Yeah, he stole those from that, so...
So I think it was fair game. I'm sure George's ego. He might have came up to Ridley and been like, "Hey, Ridley, hey, what's with the opening crawl? Why is that in your movie?" George, I just put it in there. I don't know. I don't know. Just don't pay attention to it. It's not important.
It sounds the actual crawl itself, if you actually read it, sounds a little bit like Law and Order. Like, these are their stories.
Oh yeah,
like it looks. I was like, that's actually kind of interesting.
It's even done in a similar font to the Law and Order thing.
But like, I like this film for just like the genre of it, like the actual noir aspect of a sci-fi genre. This is what I would, and you know this about me.
Oh yeah,
I've posted this about a number of times. Like one of the standalone Star Wars films I want them to make would be really cool is if they did it like Blade Runner, where it was like a set in the slums of Coruscant with the rain and all that stuff like down, and it's a noir film set in Star Wars. I think that'd be really cool, and Blade Runner would be like a really cool look, or maybe film to base off of or to look at as far as like what the standard would be for a film like that. I think it'd be really cool to have that, but I think this film is going to be, I think 2049 is going to build on the film. And I think you can't really see 2049 without having seen Blade Runner itself. So I'm told from whatever all the reviews I've read so far.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I don't remember the last time I actually... I'm trying to remember the last time I saw a sequel to something and didn't see the first movie. Or the, you know, the one that came before it. But I want to say, just go ahead and watch it if you're going to see this movie. Oh, Tron. I did that with Tron. I saw Tron Legacy before Tron.
Yeah, I did too.
But yeah, if you just go and see it just so you'll have some context, some ideas of what's happening. Because I'm willing to bet this is a very, much like the predecessor, this is a very dense movie that relies on you knowing what's happened before. I'm not sure. I've not seen any plot synopsis. I mean, you have heard, you've heard also that you should watch the first movie as well. But I would just recommend it, or recommend watching the first movie before Blade Runner. And also, it's a good movie.
It's a very good film. Wonderful film.
I don't understand why people don't like... I understand why people would say it's boring or it doesn't...
It's very long drawn out. So that's the thing about Ridley Scott, is that the way he directs things, he loves long takes. Loves mm-hmm. them.
Right.
And a lot of times he'll do a lot of these tracking long takes that just sort of... You feel like, all right, we get it. It's a slow-paced movie. But like this one he really took his time with. I guess it's just because of how he wanted to shoot it and he wanted to make this. I really felt like there was a bunch of things that could have been cut out or changed in the film, but like at the same time I wouldn't cut them out or change them because of how nostalgic about that film, how just I feel about Blade Runner as a whole. And then just looking at just the goofiness, the campiness. It's a little bit campy.
Really?
I feel like it's just like some of the stuff where you see I think one of my favorite scenes is when Harrison Ford is pretending to be that interviewer.
Oh yeah, that's typical. That's typical noir. The detective pretends to be somebody to get information.
But he doesn't really need to be though. That's what I'm getting at. Like, and that she doesn't know who he is like at all. She has no idea who he is, like the Blade Runner at all. So like
he shouldn't present himself as Detective Deckard.
I know, but what I was getting was he could have just done a regular voice, but he did that little hi, I'm from the such and such place from this, and you'd be surprised where people look at, and then like a lot of those lines, and then just the arbitrariness of that whole scene was just, I loved how campy it was. There was very little, but at the same time, it still was very like you had, there's still little scenes that are just in there to be in there that are really. I mean, they could have been without, but I still wouldn't... I would like them to stay in there.
Yeah. That's the thing about this movie is... you're talking about long shots. There's a shot where an eye is looking at the city as it's, you know, fuming fires out of this, you know, onto the skyline.
Which, what purpose does that serve?
It's... I don't know, but it's a beautiful shot. It's like... And it looks amazing in, like, 1080p. And it probably would look amazing in 4K.
Did you hear about the? I saw the Mr. Sunday Movies did a video on the, just about the original Blade Runner. I watched it this morning, and he talks about how the Blade Runner curse, like all the product placements except for Coke, are all like doomed products now in the movie. I don't know if you've seen that or not.
No, I have not.
Like almost all like Atari, Cuisinart, like. Like all those different like things you see, Pan Am, really?
Oh yeah, Pan Am's dead.
Just all these different, like almost all the brand names you see in there, minus Coke, is pretty much like done as far as in that film. So that there's that brand curse. So like maybe we'll see some stuff in here. Although apparently Atari does make a cameo in 2049. Like there's Atari symbols everywhere.
Oh yeah, Well, here's the thing. I would kind of make a fun argument that Blade Runner takes place in an alternate universe to mm-hmm. our own. That's why we still don't have flying cars, even though Blade Runner takes place in 2019.
Yeah.
We still don't have, you know, flying cars, and LA isn't. I mean, LA is pretty crammed, but it's nowhere near as like on top of each other as it is in the movie.
Is it just me, or does L.A. look like Hong Kong? Downtown Hong Kong.
Is it because of the commercial of the girl eating noodles?
Just everything. Like that. It looked very much like raining China not necessarily Hong Kong, but if not Hong Kong, what is it? What was that movie with Cloud Atlas?
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That had that very much of a feel to it. Like that, it looked a lot like just a rain, that rainy slum, Chinese slum type feel to it.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it. I can see that. Like, yeah, I could see that being a Hong Kong scenario. I would kind of just say it's more, yeah, the Hong Kong is a really good comparison. Because, I mean, I've seen cities from looking at photographs of, you know, it all kind of looks similar to the city in Blade Runner, to the Los Angeles we know in Blade Runner. I would just say it's nowhere, I just would say is it's just nowhere near as extremely dense as Blade Runner feels. Like, Blade Runner feels claustrophobic when you see it. I mean, yes, there's wide shots, but when we're on ground level, it feels claustrophobic and everyone's on top of each other. Like, even when Deckard, when we first meet him and he's sitting there eating his noodles, I mean, you just feel everyone just like coming on to him, like, or just like everyone just walking around him.
Here's a good question. Would you want them to go back and rotoscope this movie to fit the modern look?
No.
Like, you wouldn't want them to do that? Like, some of those set pieces are kind of dated. So you'd want to keep, I'm talking like the background shots, like just go back and have them, you could still like make them look like the old movie did, but I'm saying like go back and update them, like.
Like,
sort of like how, I don't know if you've seen Star Wars
special edition.
That's a special edition. Star Wars did a what's his name? Harmy did a where he went and rotoscoped a bunch of Star Wars original and made it so that he put them through a Blu-ray filter, and then he took certain scenes from certain versions of it where they cut out all the extra CGI stuff and they basically updated the graphics on it. So that's what I'm getting at, is like they would go back and just redo all the set pieces, but keep all the main acting in there, like just all the extra stuff. Would you want them, or do you want to keep that plastic? Because it kind of looks kind of, those, that is, like I said, I saw it the other day, and it's very dated now, like that those set pieces are.
You mean like when the cars are flying through the city and all?
Yeah, all that stuff.
No, and here's my thing. I have nothing against CGI, and I have nothing against directors. You know, I have nothing against directors retooling their own movies. But the thing is, and the reason why Lucas has gotten so much shit over it for over the years, is because that's the only versions people know. Like yes, you can find VHS tapes of the old Star Wars movies or the earliest prints imaginable. Because even after Star Wars came out in 1977, Lucas kept retooling the prints even then. But I mean, you can't find an original print of THX 1138. Like, all you have is the 2005 director's cut. Like, everything is pretty much, like, that's all there is of THX 1138. So I don't, maybe just do it, but also make sure you have a cut of the original piece so people can see what the effects look like. Because also, here's the thing. Douglas Trumbull, the special photographic effects supervisor on this movie, he did an incredible job, especially for what it's worth. He did an incredible job of matte paintings and having, you know, flying cars like swoop in optically. I mean, that's hard work to do for 1982. Now, I mean, of course, you press the buttons and voila, they flew into the building. You can even have them fly in CGI and land in one shot, but I don't know. I like this, you know, I like to see Douglas Trumbull's work on full display. You know, I don't want them to kind of get rid of it, or because that's his legacy. That's what he was known for, is to do those kind of, you know, effects. I mean, even going to Star Trek, I'll admit it's a boring movie, but the visual effects are incredible for what it's all worth. So, no, I don't want them to change and add CGI, or even change the I mean, if you have to change the filter so you don't notice the noise, because the noise that's going to come from when you know, recopy from the 35mm negative. But yeah, I'm kind of okay with where the movie's at right now.
Okay. Performances in this movie, what did you think?
I think they're all good. I think everyone's good. I think Harrison Ford, I mean, he's definitely trying to break away from, his Han Solo and slash Indiana Jones routine, as he's trying to play a more darker character, a more complex character. Not saying Indiana Jones and Han Solo are not complex, but he's trying to do a complex movie in a different kind of movie.
I'll say a lot of people would argue that this movie and Indiana Jones would be the two movies that got him out of that curse, because like a lot of people think that Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill never really worked after Star Wars, and they really didn't. If you look at it, like they had some voicing jobs where they did a lot of voice acting, mm-hmm. but like they haven't really acted in anything.
Well,
major.
And Carrie Fisher also became a screenwriter.
Yeah, she did. But like as far as like acting careers goes, like people would always associate her with Princess Leia and always. But like mm-hmm. the fact that Harrison Ford had other projects that he did, I think this helped a lot with that.
Yeah,
with him being able to branch out at least.
Yeah, and even, well, and also Harrison Ford has, I'm not saying anything mean against Mark Hamill or Carrie Fisher. I think they're great actors, but I think Harrison Ford was the best actor of all three.
Mm-hmm.
Like he, even though he's the most reluctant actor in the world, he's the best. Like he was the best of the three. Like, and that's not to take away Mark Hamill. Mark Hamill's a great, great voice actor.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, in some of his recent work in Brisby Bear and Kingsman, he's fantastic in those roles. But even watching some of the Star Wars stuff, like you can tell that he's not going to be, you know, a Tom Cruise or a Harrison Ford, or he's not going to be. And I don't think he wanted to be that guy anyway. So, and then Carrie Fisher is just kind of a tragedy. It's kind of a tragedy in itself because she is actually a really good actress. She got better with each progressing Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
And she did some comedies here and there, but nothing really just came about of that. And it's very similar to what happened to Sean Young, who plays Rachel in this movie. I really like what Sean Young did in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so sad what happened to her in her career. Because she was going to play Vicki Vale in Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And she really wanted to play Catwoman. And she wanted to play it so much that she dressed up as Catwoman in a leather suit and went to the offices of Warner Brothers and was like, please cast me. Look at me. I want to do it. It never happened. And she kind of always just kind of been, you know, especially after Dune, she kind of always just been like sidelined and given like nothing roles. And here, I think she proves that she's a capable actress. She's a likable actress that doesn't have to be, you know, she didn't have to be a supermodel. She didn't have to, and she's a way better actress than Kim Basinger. So, I think she was kind of undercut by Hollywood. But everyone else, I mean, Rucker Howard breaking out as Roy Batty. Daryl Hannah also breaking out, even though she didn't have a whole lot to do, she still broke out. You know, I mean, you remember Pris,
mm-hmm.
and then everyone else, I think they did the roles they were supposed to do. Like, the person who plays Lou, Brian James, he did the best he could, and he played a strong, intimidating person. Basically what would become Bill Paxton.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just, I think it was a really good cast they had. I think everyone did well. What did you think of the cast?
I liked everyone except, I personally wasn't a fan of Roy Batty. I thought like a lot of what his monologues were just over the top, and he actually, apparently all those lines he did were improvised. Like
he wrote them on set.
Yeah, he wrote them on set. He didn't write them for, like they weren't scripted for him. And I felt like I think Ridley Scott would have had a better time if he'd have written those monologues for himself, and that would have made more sense, or just played a little bit more with just the world building and the theme building, like especially mm-hmm. the themes of the movie. And I think that some of those monologues were just like,
I mean, it fleshes the character out.
Yeah.
And that's what that's what it matters, because when you see Roy Batty, he's a person that's really just like, he knows death is on his doorstep, and he's trying to extend his life because he knows that death is coming to him unfairly soon. And he wants to extend life not only for himself, but for everyone else that's still alive. The other, you know, everyone else that came with him, Pris, Lou, I forget who was the snake girl. And they all like, they all came on this kind of risky pilgrimage to meet God, their God essentially, to see what they can do to extend life. And so he's, you know, so I understand like his monologues and the monologue he gives at the end, it's emotional. Like mm-hmm. it's beautiful. I mean, it's him basically saying life is precious, you know, don't take it for granted. It's beautiful. And every memory you have of every beautiful memory you have, like it's yours. And it's,
do you think it's fair that they created the replicant of Rachel because of, like, do you think it's fair to Ray that Rachel exists?
What was your question?
Do you think it's fair to Ray that Rachel exists?
You mean Roy?
That's what I meant. Yeah, no, I said Roy. Yeah.
That's what threw me off.
Yeah, my bad. Do you think it's fair to Roy that Rachel exists?
No. And that's how it's supposed to be. I mean, that's again, world building of Blade Runner, that the world is not fair to replicants. It's so unfair to them, and it's unfair to Rachel because she thought she was human, and Tyrell led her to believe that she was just a secretary for him. And really, you know, Deckard drunkenly like just confirms everything, her worst fears, and that's why that scene of her like doing the signature Jennifer Lawrence one tear that's now, you know, trademarked by Jennifer Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
When she does that, I mean, it's emotional for her because she's coming to realize, well, fuck. I mean, nothing is real. Like, you know, her reality is shattered. That's why she leaves Tyrell permanently.
So, and that's why I sort of laughed earlier when you said she was a great romantic lead. I'm like, I really didn't see much from her. I really didn't think she did anything beyond just be a plot device to sort of foil everything Roy was going for.
Well, yeah, and the thing to also keep in mind is during production, they didn't, Sean Young and Harrison Ford, they did not get along. And it was really more because Harrison was the experienced actor, and this was, I think, one of Sean Young's first movies.
Mm-hmm.
She did this way before, I think she was in Stripes as well. I think I heard that she was in Stripes. I might be wrong, but I heard that on another
one. I think she might have been in Stripes. Bill Murray, good movie.
Yeah, so anyway, you know, this was like one of her first roles, so she was really Scott had to, you know, put a lot on her, and also, which made Harrison pissed, because Harrison's an actor where he wants to work side by side with the director.
Yeah, she's in there.
But the thing is, Ridley's not an actor's director. He's one of those directors that's going to be like, here's a script, go do it, go make your own character out of it, go figure it out. I cast you because you're this character, go figure it out. And that kind of pissed Harrison Ford, that, you know, and it rubbed him the wrong way, that he had to keep going back to Sean because she was so inexperienced. So yeah, there was the chemistry at times is a little bit eh. And then my least favorite scene in the whole movie is the rape scene. Mm-hmm. It's a rape scene. Let's all admit it. I know it's supposed to be a love scene and there's a love theme in there, but it's really, you know, it's really Deckard essentially just like forcing himself onto her.
Also, if she's a replicant and he is human, he is a first-class citizen forcing himself on a third-class citizen.
Yeah.
So that's even more like messed up.
It is. I think that's why they want us to believe he's a replicant so much. So it's not so...
so creepy.
Yeah, and look, it is, and Vangelis, like, he tries to make it as romantic as possible with this scene. But yeah, that scene is just so, like, rapey. Even as the first time I was watching, I was like, what just happened? What just happened? Like, she's walking out, and he's, like, pushing her to the wall.
And then even at the end of the movie, say you love me. I love you.
I love you. Like, yeah, it's not a, you know, very multi-dimensional relationship, or it's not a, you know, give or take relationship. And, but I mean, but yeah, so let's talk about the ending.
Okay.
And we'll get to the, so have you heard of the theatrical cut ending?
I haven't seen it, but it's apparently a lot different than the final cut. The final cut has to do with like him picking up that origami, that tinfoil origami, and then he's like, and then he hears the same line from earlier, and then that's how. Then he just sort of walks off and pockets the origami figure, or it's like a swan or a unicorn or something like that.
Yeah, it's a unicorn. All the cuts have him picking up the origami after Sean trips it up and, or like knocks it down, and he looks at it and he hears the line, you know. Mm-hmm. That's said after Roy dies, and all the cuts do, but the theatrical cut ends with, you know, basically Harrison Ford and Deckard and Rachel, they're in the car together, and they're just like driving through beautiful countryside of Northern California, and he's like in the worst, you know, voiceover ever. Like, the voiceover is painfully bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, explaining, well, Rachel will live forever. We don't really know how much time we have, but who does? And then it trails off with the Shining, like, outtakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the original ending. And then the director's cut is... The director's cut and the final cut are pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. Like, it's... Deckard picks up the origami. He remembers the line. And then... Or he remembers what Gaff says. And... He looks at it, and then he kind of grins, and then puts it in his pocket, and then the door closes, and then that's the movie. So I think, and the reason, and the difference between the director's cut and the final cut is the final cut doesn't have a scene where Deckard is dreaming of a unicorn. Like,
doesn't
that,
have that scene?
The final cut doesn't. The director's cut does.
Then I might have seen the director's cut recently, because I could have sworn I saw the final cut.
I remember specifically looking for that scene because it's so crucial.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, because without that scene, it's more ambiguous,
mm-hmm.
as to if he's a replicant or not. But yeah, that's the whole, like. But yeah, that's this, you know, that's where the whole like reason why, like, that's where that whole question comes from, is because, you know, because the original title of the book was from Philip K. Dick was "Do Androids Sleep a Dream of Electric Sheep?"
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, in the movie, Harrison Ford dreams of a unicorn, and of course, you know, it's Gaff who makes a unicorn, and it looks exactly like the unicorn in his dream. That's the movie telling us that he's a replicant. Deckard is a replicant, as well as Rachel and the other four people. That's what that implies.
So the question is, in 2049, are we going to see Rachel?
Is that going to be answered?
And that's another thing, is Rachel going to be the same age? Are they going to find like some, ooh, that'd be cool if they did sort of like they did in Rogue One. Or they recreate a young Sean Young. That'd be cool if they did something like that where he's still with her.
That would actually kind of be cool, even though I doubt Rachel's in this movie. I just doubt it.
Because
I think they're... Because I kind of assume that while they were running, they were kind of having to run... They were also hunted as well. Because mm-hmm. it's been found out that Deckard and Rachel... are together, so I think Rachel might be dead, but that would actually be cool if to have her come in, and also it'd be great to see Sean Young again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she hasn't been in anything really since anything noticeable since the 90s.
So moving forward, so what do you want to see out of 2049?
Ooh. I want to see what Ryan Gosling is about. Like, mm-hmm. and I don't want, I don't, really care. I should say this. It doesn't really matter if Ryan Gosling's character is a replicant or not. But it would be odd to be like, and he's a replicant too, and now everyone's a replicant.
Like that's they're running out of gags. I hope they don't do that.
I think what we're getting, and I hope we see this, is a more defined of the world between the androids and the humans. I hope to see that. That's what I want to see more of. Because in the first one, we know there's replicants, and we only see a handful of them, or we're told is a handful of them. And then everything else is like, okay, so where's the divining? Where's the wall? Because it's mentioned in the trailer that there's a defined line of replicant and human. Like there's a definity to it.
Which trailer are you referring to? Because I've only seen the first two. I was told not to watch the third one because the third one supposedly has a lot of spoilers in it.
Trailer two.
Okay.
So I just hope they don't do anything odd, and I don't. That's not Blade Runner. And from the looks of things, I think they've done an okay job of keeping everything going. So
are you excited for Denis Villeneuve to take the reins for this one?
You mean Denis Villeneuve?
Denis, I always said it's
Dion.
It has been such a long week. But yeah, Denis Villeneuve, are you excited to see him take the reins?
Oh, yeah. And here's the thing. Denis Villeneuve is a director who's gotten better with each progressing movie. I don't know how many of his other works you've seen.
I've seen Arrival.
Have you seen Sicario or Enemy?
I haven't seen Sicario. I need to see Sicario.
Sicario is... it's his best movie. I love Arrival a lot, but Sicario just wins by, like, a hair.
Mm-hmm.
But every movie of his just has gotten better and better. And I hope that's the trajectory we're getting. And also, he's an interesting filmmaker in that he's jumped from different genres. I mean,
I like that about him. I love that he's kind of like Spielberg. Spielberg kind of loves to pick different genres and different mm-hmm. different looks at certain things, and that's what I like about him.
And even now, like, he's already signed on to do a Dune reboot, and then also kind of help usher in a new Dune TV show that will kind of go with the movie.
I wish they wouldn't do that. Leave Dune alone. I want them to do... you know what, honestly, I really wish they would do? I wish they'd reboot Starship Troopers.
Okay.
Which yeah. they're still talking about doing that. But I think it'd be, if they were to do that, if they want to do something like Dune, do Starship Troopers. Don't do...
yeah, that's fair.
Because Dune is already kind of weirdish.
Well, the problem with Dune is it's very dry.
Oh, yeah.
You get it? It takes place in the desert.
I get it, yeah.
He makes sci-fi look, I mean, I don't know about Blade Runner 2049, but Arrival is like pure sci-fi, and he makes that work very well. So
I think it'd be cool. I'd like to see him step away from the sci-fi genre and try something entirely different. Like, and he tried Sicario. Sicario was great. From what you told me, Sicario was great.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I loved Arrival, and I'm going to probably love 2049.
And Enemy is kind of like his, like, Nolan/Lynch type thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And then Prisoners is a kidnapping drama.
I'd love to see him do a Western, personally. I think it'd be really cool to see his French Western.
French Western?
An Indian French. Well, that'd be cool. That'd actually be really cool, like, to see him do something like with that genre, because, you're going to be the best place to do that with, because they're doing a movie, and I said this would happen, the Obi-Wan movie. I think he should do a Western style, samurai Western style with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
That would be so cool.
And it's Denis Villeneuve, so you still get to do that little bit of a sci-fi feel to
Denis.
Denis Villeneuve. Sorry, my bad. I don't... je ne parle français.
But yeah, that would be cool. That's a lot better than Stephen Daldry, who brought us extremely loud and incredibly close.
Which actually got pretty good buzz for what it was. It's a 9/11 movie.
Here's the thing. I won't even bother. It's,
yeah, don't get into it. Then.
It's a weird movie, and the reader is just depressing as it can be. Depressing and doesn't also make any sense.
But I think that'd be really cool. I don't know if they have announced a director for the Obi-Wan movie yet or not, but Villeneuve would be really great for that movie, and it'd be really cool to do like a Western type feel with it, mm-hmm. and make it samurai Western too. So Obi-Wan is like a wandering samurai who just walks into a village in Tatooine. And has to like save it or something like that, or just that'd be really cool, like little one-off story. It wouldn't help build the lore at all. It'd just be a really cool story, but that'd be cool though.
That'd be really cool
to see just a story that has nothing to do with like building up the Star Wars lore. It's just a cool little niche story inside of it.
Yeah, and I mean, people seem to like working with Denis Villeneuve, and of course, I mean, as we've been following, as you know, we've been reading up on the Star Wars Lucasfilm drama with Phil Lord, Christopher Miller out, Gareth Edwards having problems with Rogue One, and Colin Trevorrow now out.
And now J.J. Abrams is going to direct another Star Wars film because he made them so much money the first time. I don't really agree with that, but at the end of the day, he helped.
What it's worth, they needed someone who's made a movie in order, because it takes like 3.5 years to make one of these.
Mm-hmm.
And they really need, and I think it's mandated now to come out every year. So I think, or within a year, year and a half of each other. So they just really needed to come out in December 2019, and this was, so it's a compromise, really. Mm-hmm. But anyway, well, the other projects Denis Villeneuve is attached to is a James Bond movie,
mm-hmm.
and he's being offered to do Cleopatra.
Interesting. Okay. That'd be really cool. Would they do Cleopatra's? Where would they set Cleopatra? The Cleopatra in Rome or Cleopatra in Egypt?
Oh,
that'd be cool.
I don't remember, but I want to say, probably I want to say Rome. Yeah, Egypt would probably be it. I mean, they could do Rome and hire like Gal Gadot to do it. For all I know.
Although she's getting some really cool roles outside of Wonder Woman, she's moving up in that too. I like that. She's a very fantastic actress.
Now that she's done with her now that she's done with all the Justice League reshoots,
which I'm told, did I hear right that they're going to end the DCEU?
No, I think they're just reforming it. They're reboot. Well, it's a soft rebooting.
Okay.
Because what happened was, and we're going off topic, but this is kind of important. From what I've heard, is that after Justice League, like Justice League was a bad cut. Like the first cut was terrible, and they were just going to let it be.
Mm-hmm.
But when Wonder Woman started picking up like attention from test screenings and from early buzz, they were like, "Well, shit. We got to make Justice League watchable now." So, because the original plan was just let Wonder Woman and Justice League be, and then we'll kind of soft reboot it with Aquaman, and then from there we'll kind of reform the cinematic universe. Because I think they were also Snyder, not to say anything mean or degrading to Snyder, but I think they were already planning on Snyder, you know, kind of getting him out the door,
getting the boot.
Yeah, they were already planning on getting him out, regardless of whatever happened, regardless of if he had a family tragedy or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were already edging him out. So they're just kind of reformatting it or rebooting it. That's why we're hearing Ben Affleck might not be doing Batman, because they were going to go probably with a younger Batman. It's just a whole thing. But going back to Blade Runner 2049, I'm excited for this movie, and I really love Blade Runner, and I hope Blade Runner 2049, all 164 minutes of it, lives up to the hype. Because this is, as we mentioned earlier this year on the 2017 Most Anticipated podcast, this is my number one movie I'm looking forward to this year. Mm-hmm. More than Star Wars, and I'm looking forward to Star Wars Episode VIII. I'm super pumped, and I hope we get a trailer out this Monday or this week or next week. But this is gold for me. This is like, you know, this is what I've always wanted. I love techno thrillers, and everyone, just thank you for, and also thank you, Nick, for letting me indulge in letting me talk about this movie for
An hour. No problem at all. I love talking film with you, man. Like this is probably the highlight of my week right now, which is kind of sad, but no, it's actually really fun, and I love being on the show. So thanks for inviting me out.
Yeah. So do we have any more thoughts on Blade Runner?
No, I'm tapped out.
Me too. Let's just go see it right now.
I'm excited to go see it. I mean, it won't open for another 5 hours. We can go sit in the theater.
Yeah, we can just sit in the line like they did in 1980, like they did in the 1980s.
Dude, like, I don't think I've seen a movie where anyone's actually camped out for it in a long time. The first movie I think I've seen anyone do that was Star Wars Episode 7. In a long time, I've seen anyone camp for it.
Well, I think that kind of got ruined with advanced tickets. Mm-hmm. Like, now you... Because, I mean, I've even heard a rumor that they're going to start selling tickets, you know, next week for Star Wars The Last Jedi. And I think advanced tickets has kind of ruined that, because now everyone can just get their tickets, and then on December, and then whenever the movie comes out, they can just, you know, get in the theater and not have to wait in a line. Because when I saw The Force Awakens, there was no one at the ticket counter.
Mm-hmm.
But my theater that Brandon and I sat in, Brandon Cooley and I sat in, and all the other like theaters that were doing a 7 o'clock showing, including the IMAX, sold out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's just a likelihood. I think if anything, you'll see a line to get into the auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
For people like that are sitting there waiting. Because I saw that with Hunger Games, too. I saw that with Hunger Games Catching Fire on opening night, where people were just... had already had their tickets, and they were just waiting to get in, because they were doing it, like, every 30 minutes. Like, every... like, they only had, like, 15 to 20 minutes in between showings. Like, they literally... the theater people, they would run in, like, madness, and clean it out as much as, you know... to make it like bearable, cleanable from the last screening, and then just pile everyone in and then start previews. That's how the Hunger Games did. Star Wars was a different case because we just had reserve seating.
So. Yeah, I mean, and when I saw Star Wars the first time, there's a line out the door. And then I saw it again with my dad. And Dad, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I didn't see it first time with you. Which I don't ever think you'll hear this, but I'm sorry about that. But like, that was when I first saw it. I saw it with my now ex-girlfriend. And she took me to see it and everything, and there was a line out the door. Like, there's people dressed up in costumes, and I was like, this is the first time I've ever been to something like this. And people already had their tickets. We already had our tickets. We were just waiting to get inside.
Oh, yeah, I had my tickets 2 months before. Yeah, because Brandon and I wanted to have the reserve seating at the mall, whatever mm-hmm. theater that is. So I already had the tickets, so yeah. And it was packed, and it's a joyous experience to go watch Star Wars on opening night.
Oh yeah!
Like, even when we saw Rogue One, you know, with Brandon and a couple of other of our friends, I mean, it's fun to see people react. It's fun to see, you know, that crowd get excited to see, you know, the Easter eggs and references, and you know, see the Millennium Falcon for the first time in 30 years. It's fun.
Oh yeah.
But with that said, I hope Blade Runner has the same experience. I hope we have the same similar experience with Blade Runner, because I think almost everyone I know is seeing the movie this weekend. Like, they're curious. Like, that's the best part about this marketing campaign. It's left people curious as to what this movie will be. But then again, we're surrounded by film students. I'm surrounded by film people all the time.
Yeah, we go to a film academy.
Yeah. So it's common to be like for people to go, yeah, Blade Runner. We're definitely going to see that because it's highly regarded amongst film fans. So with that said, I think we're done with Blade Runner. So Nick, where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Nick_Briz, B-R-I-Z. And then you can find me on Instagram at MountainsMakeTheMan. I'm doing a lot of photography over there. Come check it out. Actually, I might be changing that channel to Mountains Maketh the Man in honor of Kingsman.
Cool.
But I haven't decided on that yet. Right now, those are the only two plugs I'm doing. I'm taking a hiatus from like social media, so those are the only two like that I'll probably be regularly posting to. But like Facebook and Snapchat, I'm not really using those right now. And then, just if you want to get in touch with me, you can always email me at, or I don't know if you could just, you could tweet me on at those two sites or message me on those two sites.
Yeah. And you can find me at Movie Kale on Twitter. And you can also follow this podcast on Twitter at The Youth Critic. Then you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHZ Network. So there is no retrospective this week, or I mean, there's no regular podcast this week. We did not review American Made or Flatliners. Hey,
I can talk about American Made. I saw it.
Oh, well, what'd you think real quick?
American Made was actually really good. I liked it. I love that feel it had to it. I mean, that was I saw that last week on Sunday, and it was just Tom Cruise is still Tom Cruise and kicking ass and taking names. And for what the movie was, I thought it was really wonderfully shot and wonderfully done. And it just, I liked the documentary style feel it had to it. I love the way he did. And I love the throwbacks to like 80s VHS and all that stuff like that. And just a few other things, and it was just a really it was a fantastic film for what it was.
I have not seen it yet.
Really?
Yeah, this is the one movie. I mean, I went to the movies this weekend. I saw Rio Bravo and that Ben Stiller movie, Brad Status, this weekend. Both movies are very good, and you should check them out. But yeah, I didn't have time to see American Made. I had a couple things. I'm watching the Friday the 13th movies right now for the next Halloween podcast, which will be the next retrospective, listeners. And yeah, so I just kind of got busy with that, and I had to watch a movie for Film Theory. So it's just been busy. But anyway, speaking of Friday the 13th, next Friday on the 13th, we will have a Friday the 13th podcast, where we'll talk about the first four movies in the Friday the 13th franchise. And we'll talk about the rest on two other different parts. The second part will be on October 20th, where we'll talk about parts 5 through 8. And then on the 27th, we'll talk about 9, 10, Freddy vs. Jason, and the Friday the 13th remake. So that's a special announcement. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Please check out Nick Brisby, and that's it.
Every civilization was built off the back of a disposable workforce, but I can only make so many. Happy birthday.